Hello, everybody. This is Kevin Kovac. I'm joined by Kyle McFadden, another Dirt Reporter, for our Dirt Reporters podcast for the week of March 6, 2024. Derek Kessinger, our usual host, he's not available this week, and neither is Todd Turner. He's on sabbatical. So we've changed things up a little bit. We're going to actually digging back into the history of the Dirt Reporters podcast. And joining us this week is Joshua Joyner from Hunt the Front, Hunt the Front Super Dirt Series, and also the Hunt the Front website. And Joshua, of course, he used to work with Dirt on Dirt. And Joshua, he was the guy who came up with the suggestion that we should do a Dirt on Dirt, Dirt Reporters podcast, right, Joshua? So we welcome you back as a returning, soldier here to the Dirt on Dirt gang.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back. Appreciate y'all having me. But it's pretty cool to see y'all keeping it going. I think what's probably going on a couple years, 2 or 3 years now, this still has been going on since we kind of brainstormed, and I guess I came up with the idea, but I think it was a group effort. But pretty cool to see y'all still have it going.
Yeah, this is episode number 148, Joshua. This is unbelievable that nice. We made it this far, huh? So yeah, it is. Basically 3 years almost. Yep.
I'm surprised. I didn't think we'd make it past 10 episodes when we started it back in the day. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Everybody, right, Kyle? Like, a lot of people always seem like they mention, talk to us about it. Like, they say they listen to us in the work or anything. So we're very appreciative of Joshua for getting us getting us going, rolling the ball down the hill here for us to do this podcast. And the thing we want to talk about this week, we're going to change it up again a little bit, where We're gonna lay into the Dirt Reporters angle a little bit here, and we're gonna ask some questions. We're gonna be the Dirt Reporters asking questions of Joshua and get some stories, get some info about his, the Hunt the Front Super Dirt Series and the Hunt the Front website itself and the history a little bit. And one other thing I do want to mention too, though, like Joshua, it's kind of neat here where Joshua, his first tour of duty with Dirt on Dirt, he left. I followed him about in 2014. I followed him into the writing spot after he left, and he followed me into the World of Outlaws late model PR spot that I had left at that point. So we had that connection, and then Joshua returned again as we had more writers a few years later. And then when he left a couple years ago, Kyle responded by taking that spot. So look at this. We're all connected with a nice circle, right, Kyle? Right, Joshua?
Yeah, we're all intertwined, and it's kind of like the cycle of life with the full circle moment here too. So that's cool. That's... I didn't know that you two had that connection back on the Outlaw Tour. That's cool too.
It was hard shoes for both of us to follow, right, Joshua?
I was going to say, that's what I was about to say, is I feel like I had the tougher act to follow replacing you at World of Outlaws than you had replacing me at Dirt on Dirt. I will say that it was harder for me to fill those shoes.
He didn't last as long at the World of Outlaws as I did, though. So let's put it that
way.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, the reason I left Dirt on Dirt to begin with was my son was born. And so I really was trying to get away from the sport, not trying mm-hmm. to, but needed to. Right. The family stuff and everything. And then there's not a whole lot of people in this sport, the media side of it. And you guys know how hard this job is. And especially back then, there was no covering it remotely, right? Like we do, like you're able mm-hmm. to do now. And we did my second stint at Flow there. You had to go to all those races. I mean, it was every weekend, just about. We were going to races back then. And, the World of Outlaws gig, after I left Dirt on Dirt to be home more, the World of Outlaws gig gave me a chance to get back into it without traveling as much. But I still only lasted, I think, a year and a half before it was like, all right, I need to step back and focus on family stuff. But And then here I am again, back in it. You know, I feel like we're at the races all the time now. But is the whole family's in it now, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and Joshua's son, I believe he just turned 10 years old now too, right? Wasn't that just a couple yesterday or
two days
ago, right?
Yes, he did.
It was. So yeah, he turned 10 last week. We had his birthday over the weekend there at the house. So yeah, it was 2014 that he was born. And I left Dirt on Dirt and ended up at World of Outlaws, and here we are 2024. 10 years. God, time flies. I feel so old right now. I'm saying yeah, that.
Look at that. A whole decade goes by already. Well, one of the things now that we definitely want to talk about with your Hunt to Front deal is last year you guys started off the Hunt to Front Super Dirt Series, that regional tour, and it's really come along quickly. I mean, $50,000 to win the championship this year for a regional tour, that's damn good. I mean, I don't think there's probably the only regional tour you could even find over time that's paid that much to win would maybe be back in, what was it, 2002, 2001, when the Dirt Car Summer Nationals paid $100,000 to win. And that was not the same kind of tour. That's a month-long deal. This is, like, spread out over the whole season. And so we wanted to ask you, like, why did you want to get in number one? It was after you went back to with your brothers with Hunt the Front. Of course, anybody doesn't know Hunt the Front, you know, it's the Joyner family that has that started it all out and has really became popular, and it's and their race team, everyone knows it now because of the website and the behind the scenes stuff that they've done. And then Joshua came back and started working with his family again after he left Dirt on Dirt. What made you want to do a series? It's not easy. There's no doubt about it, because you definitely have to take a lot of things, a lot of grief, I think, sometimes. But it could be great too if it works right.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a challenge for sure. And I mean, I don't know. I just always, going back, I think it was 2020, I think during one of the Intercontinental Classic at Eldora there, and we were covering it. And I was back working with Flo Dirt/Dirt on Dirt at that time. And I remember being there talking with Rigsby, Michael Rigsby, you know, VP of Flow Racing or whatever his title is now, original founder of Dirt on Dirt. But
Big Cheese.
Yeah, we were talking about exactly. I just had the idea that we needed a better option for racing in the Southeast, a better series, more organized, more professional. I just felt like it was, as a whole, the sport in the Southeast especially was very decentralized, I think. And I think it was hurting the sport and really hurting the drivers and fans by not providing, you know, like we weren't seeing the best of our region coming together in races ever, right? Like it was, you'd have a 5,000 win Southern All-Stars race in Alabama, a 5,000 win Ultimate race in South Carolina, a 5,000 win Carolina Clash race somewhere. And then maybe Ray Cook's deal was running for 10. And it's like, none of these are actually, like, I don't know, like it just wasn't, we needed something bigger and better, I felt like. And that was our goal from the beginning, was to build that, you know, something that was bigger and better, and I don't mean to discredit what those guys are doing, those series. I just think we had the option, you know, with our base and our following on YouTube, we had the opportunity to do that through streaming, right? Through bringing in revenue through streaming that I think normally a regional tour doesn't have, right? It doesn't have that the kind of revenue we're able to generate through our streaming, through our YouTube, plus not just our YouTube audience, but also plus the audience, the normal streaming audience you get from all the drivers that come and support events. So we were able to mesh those two things together. And like I said, it's something I talked about for years and originally wanted to do when I left Flow and Dirt on Dirt back in, gosh, I guess it was 2021. I wanted to do it in 2022. And it didn't work out and we didn't do it. And things, you know, we put it behind a year and started it in 2023, and it went well, good first year. And we saw the opportunity to build it again, to get where we wanted to be. And we felt like a 50,000 to win championship for a regional tour, was a big deal. And it was something we, you know, could do and sustain based on the streaming numbers we saw last year. And the, not just that, but also the attendance at the events and the support from drivers and sponsors. We saw the opportunity to do that and decided to go with it, and, you know, feel like that's where we're going to be. Like, this is our, where we feel like what we're able to do with a regional series, we feel like where we're going to be in the, you know, for the foreseeable future as far as what level we're at with the series. So hopefully it works out, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm impressed, Joshua, with your roster that you have. I mean, I think you have, what, over 12 guys committed, probably more, maybe closer to 15
at this point. It's 17. It's 18.
17?
Right,
really?
Now.
You're like,
yeah.
Ashton Winger and Tanner English, mm-hmm. and Jeff Smith is even doing the tour this year too, and Trent Ivy, who won this past weekend at Cherokee. So I mean, you have some, like, I've appreciated, I guess, just kind of like the range of talent and the walks of life that all these different drivers have. So I guess, like, when you were starting this thing up with your family this time last year, I mean, did you expect maybe this kind of roster in year two or year three? Like, what's the business plan, or like, what's the business model in terms of, like, you know, the ideal driver roster? Do you think you've reached that now? What's kind of your outlook on how you try to build up your personalities on the series?
Yeah, so I'm glad you see that and notice that. I mean, that was, I feel like, where we've taken the biggest step forward this year as far as what the product that fans are going to see on the racetrack is the geographical reach and variety, I guess, is what you'd say, of drivers that are going to follow our series. Guys from all the way from Kentucky, Tanner English, the Carolinas, great, you know, support there, Carson Ferguson, Trent Ivy, Zach Mitchell, and others. Of course, our core base last year was, you know, Alabama, you know, Central Southeast, Alabama, Georgia. We got that back again with, you know, Ashton Winger following Josh Putnam's back. And then the Florida, I'm really, as a native Floridian, where you don't see a lot of super late model racing outside of speed weeks, and, you know, really didn't have for the longest time. There was just Earl Pearson Jr., you know, carrying the Florida flag, and then Kyle Bronson's done well, but you don't see a lot of Florida drivers really, you know, at least not beyond speed weeks and here and there. Now we've got, you know, this crop of Florida drivers with Jackson Hyes, Trey Mills, Clay Harris, Joseph, my brother Joseph Joyner. Like, I feel like Florida is well representative. So that's been cool to see that. And then seeing where we've had, you know, the young guys again, the Clay Harrises and guys like that, but also the veterans, like really Jeff Smith jumping on the series is one I'm really, really excited about, and, you know, tells me we're doing a good job when you see a guy like Jeff, who's, you know, had a long career and kind of on the backside of his career, you know, see what we're doing and say he wants to be a part of it and wants to give it a shot, where, you know, he could just kind of do pick and choose and race more local in the Carolinas like he's done here lately. But you know, the fact that he's motivated to go back out on the road with our series is pretty cool to me. And I think there's going to be, you know, I feel like that is where we could improve. You know, you asked if we're where we want to be. I would like to see, you know, see a couple more veteran drivers out there with us. And I think there's still the potential for that. We are talking with a couple drivers who I think would be really good to be added to the series, and be good fit for them. But we'll see if that happens or not. But yeah, overall, that I think we've, you know, I wanted to build a series that was for the entire Southeast, right? Like, one reason, you know, I talked about those different decentralized series is because, you know, there was no real series for the entire Southeast. It was more, you know, in pockets, right? And I feel like we need an option that's kind of takes what all those guys are doing, those other series, you know, and kind of provides an option, a little bit bigger level option. Like, I feel like there's room for an in between those regional series and the national tours, and I feel like that's the gap we're filling is by providing something where, you know, we don't race a whole lot, you know, two times a month at most, or we'll try to anyway, 2 weekends a month. So there's those other options with the other tours, but, you know, we can come in and put together big races that, you know, most everyone in the Southeast wants to go run. You know, that was our approach, was the races first, like put together races in a schedule that drivers want to run and are willing to travel from South Carolina to Mississippi, and vice versa to run, so that, you know, we could build that, you know, geographic, you know, and cover the whole footprint of the Southeast geographically.
What's kind of a little feedback you're getting with from the drivers, the teams, about what it takes to run a to have a really solid regional tour, where which I'm saying is you see a lot of regional tours, they don't really have a lot of regulars. I mean, I've seen a regional tour before where by the second race only one guy had perfect attendance. This was the second race, one guy went to both of them, and that was only happened a few years ago. Maybe it was last year, I don't know. It's not too long ago. And by the end of a series, though, end of a regional tour, you're probably lucky to have three guys that have gone to all of them. And I know that you guys had last year, I believe you had a 10, right? Was it 9 or 10 that you had go to every one last year? And this year, go ahead, Joshua.
I was gonna say we had 10 until the last we had nine until the last weekend that had full time, and we had one guy, Jason Croft, who missed one race because he had a family emergency. So we had what we considered 10, and then Ryan Crane didn't make it to the last race. So we ended up with eight who had true perfect attendance, one who had a hardship, and then one that didn't make it to our last weekend. So it was around 8 to 10, however you want to look at it. Which again, for a regional tour, and where we were last year with our payouts and everything, we weren't as good as we are this year. You know, I was really, really happy with that. That was, you know, I'd wanted to get five. If we had five follow the whole tour, I would have been happy. And then we had that many, and those guys stuck with us, so we were really happy with that. I think. And this goes back, we've been hearing this for years, you know, and we've experienced, we're a race team, right? Like where my brothers are, I'm not as involved in the race team as I used to be. I stay on this side of the office of the building. I'm in our off, we call it our headquarters. It's this is all merchandise you see behind me that we're we had stuff going on at our on where my desk is, so I had to move over here in the corner. But this is, you know, we're a race team, and you know, first and foremost, always were. And they're just, there was, I don't want to talk negatively about anyone, but there wasn't a series that made sense to follow in the Southeast. And it starts, I kind of said this, it starts with the events. Whenever you have when I put together a schedule, when I say there was a lot of feedback, and I worked, you know, feedback from drivers and different people. The first thing I say is, if I have this race here, who am I going to lose? Right? Who's going to come to it and who's not? And, you know, I think other series don't really take that approach. They kind of take the approach of, where can I get races, that fit, you know, fit the dates I need to race. And while you got to do what you got to do to get your dates, you know, planning races that just literally just do not make sense for guys to come to is kind of how you get to the point where no one's really following your series, right? It just doesn't make sense. And that's where, you know, if you look at our schedule, I think it's very driver friendly. Where we tried to avoid too many back-to-back weekends. We tried to race as much as we could at the same track, to, you know, Friday, Saturday doubleheader at the same track. That's our goal to get to if we can with everything next year. So those regional teams that don't have, you know, full timers can, you know, the goal is they can, if they need, they and their crew need to take off work or close up shop, whatever they do for, you know, their real jobs and leave on a Thursday morning. They only have to do that once or twice a month. And they don't have to have a, you know, three or four full-time guys to do it, right? They don't need a truck driver to drive them overnight 4 or 5 hours, right? We're mostly staying at the same track. And then the other thing is racing for good money. That's a big movement, obviously, in the sport right now, is the top heavy purses. Our purses are a little top heavy, I'll say that, but at the same time, we're racing regionally, right? These guys shouldn't need, you know, $3,000 to start. You know, like you can't do that at the regional level, right? Like 2 and 3,000 to start. Like racing, where if you make both our shows on a weekend, you make $1,500 minimum. If you make both shows, is pretty solid at the regional level. You're not going to get that many. You know, that's our minimum every weekend, right? Our Friday shows are 5,000 to win, 500 to start, and then Saturday are minimum 15,000 to win, 1,000 to start. And that's been the most feedback, is that's money guys say they can race for, right? So I think that's the biggest thing is the schedule and then your payout.
Yeah, well, it's really, you now, oops, sorry. Thought I was on mute there. I almost did a Derek there. I thought I was on mute for a second, but I didn't check. But I know what I've talked about there before. Just with there's so many of those regional tours that don't have many guys that run them by the end of it. And you've probably put in some little incentives too. I mean, obviously you have a great points fund, 50,000 to win. Like I said earlier, it is is incredible for a regional tour. But I know you've put in some other little things, I think, with some passes and, you know, committing to the tour and just to give them some sort of incentive to go. It's tough for a regional tour, I'm sure, to do that travel money like a national tour does. And you're not traveling as far either. So you're not like you're going to North Dakota. So that's probably not required. But it is probably nice to get that little bit of extra. And I think you could talk about like some of the things you have added on there.
Yeah. So that's what we don't have compared to the national tours that, you know, and I'll say that's been our biggest, when you talk about feedback from drivers, some of the, you know, the areas that we can improve. The number one is, do you offer any show up money, right? To, when I say show up, my tow money, whatever you want to call it, like series, right? If I commit to running your series, am I guaranteed something, right? And this year we aren't in a position to do that. That's, you know, as far as I know, only the national tours are doing that. And like you said, they require you to drive all over the country and spend weeks on the time, you know, at the time on the road. I would like to get to the point where we, you know, at least a few hundred dollars per race or per track or something that we can offer drivers. We just, you know, budget wise, you know, we're doing all we can, supporting tracks and bringing revenue to events through streaming and sponsorship. You know, we do actually pay the tracks money to be there. That's, you know, and I see it all the time. People think, you know, we're taking away from the tracks, but we do bring money to the table to help make these payouts possible for these tracks. You know, that's where our focus was. Next year, maybe it's show up money or tow money, you know, for drivers, hopefully, if things grow and improve. Just wasn't in the budget this year. But we do offer, so our loyalty program, as we call it, is it's free entry to all our events for drivers. And basically, that's really it, I guess. You can look at free, you know, we offer a free subscription to Hunt the Front TV for each one. But it's kind of the way we do that is we did charge for it. It's $750 to enter. But all that money goes to fund our midseason points fund. And so guys are guaranteed, as long as they follow, even if we have 15 guys with full time at midseason after Sonoma on July 6th, they're guaranteed at least $500, right? So they get free entries to that point and they get at least 500 back with the opportunity to win. I think it's 5,000 to the guy who's leading the points at midseason. And I think goes on down. It pays 500 all the way down to 500 for 10th, and 500 anyone else with perfect attendance. So, you know, they get that money back, and they get free entry all year. I think it's pretty solid. We wanted to do pit passes this year, but that's the biggest complaint I got from tracks when trying to schedule these races is these other tours come in and they hand us a list, you know, long as our arm of free, you know, of pit passes we don't get to charge, you know. So that was kind of we weren't in a position to, you know. We're asking the tracks to do a lot on payout. So asking them to also offer, you know, that many free wristbands per night was, you know, something we didn't do this year. But again, maybe next year, if we come in and show that we can put on profitable events at this level, then maybe we can do that. But yeah, it's been overall feedback's been good from drivers and they understand. I think they see what we're trying to accomplish and what we're trying to build. And even though it's not perfect just yet, you know, obviously we've shown that we're committed to putting money back into the sport and through payouts and points funds. So hopefully they'll stay on board and we'll improve it as we go.
Yeah. You're a series director. You operate a race team but you're also a content creator too. And so I think, you know, that's also an aspect that I've always appreciated about you. And when you talk about like streaming and the product that you try to build on the stream, as well as, you know, at the track product, obviously the there's so many people nowadays not on board with streaming or just you know how it is. People get like reluctant and don't think that it's very productive in the sport, but I respond that with, well, I mean, it's all about the content and the product that you're putting out for the fans. And if they're leaving fulfilled and if they're leaving like they got their money's worth, and I'm sure like over the years, you know, what you've built with Hunt the Front and then also working here at like Dirt on Dirt, you've gained an appreciation and have known how to build content that people love and that people will want to come back to again. So how have you used, I guess, your content creating ability to help, you know, b- build your streaming service up and how you balance the two, and what you've learned about streaming and content creation, and how the two kind of, or how the three with the On Track product that you try to put on, how they're all like, how they all converge, and especially the streaming part of it, and how you work with racetracks and just like make sure it's healthy for the sport.
Well, I will say one thing I need to clarify, you know, like it's not just me, right? Like I don't have a whole lot to do with the race team at all anymore. I try to stay out of there, in fact, just and separate myself, just so, you know, on the series side, there's not a, you know, too much of a conflict of interest, at least, or I hope people see that, you know, I'm not in their pit at the races, right. Well, our series races. I do go to other races and help out when I can or whatever, but, you know, I'm kind of I'm on the series side, the streaming side. They run the race team, and on the YouTube channel side, Jonathan, my twin brother, he used to every now and then. I would do a video, I would shoot a video and edit it every now and then and help him with it, give him a break. And I haven't done that in over a year. I've been so busy with this stuff. So I'm, you know, it's a team. You know, on the race team side, it's my brothers, Joseph and Jonathan, and our buddy Jesse. And then that's also the content, the YouTube channel side. On the series side, I don't know a whole lot. Like, I'm not very good at creating video content and editing. Like, the stuff you see on our Facebook, our social media, and YouTube on the series side is all the work of other people that we've put in place to make it happen. We have a great, I guess, I don't even know what his title is, but he does everything on the production side, Logan Gibson. He built from building out our production trailer to, you know, scheduling our staff for these events we stream. And then also helping out on the content side. And we have a guy out of Mississippi, Zach Ball is his name, that we bring as much as we can to races, to shoot content, right. Just to make cool videos, that we don't even use on the live streams, just on social media and everything. And that's, you know, like, that's been the biggest difference is, or learning curve for me, is how to work, how to put people in place and let them do their thing. You know, we've really had a, you know, where I'm used to, you know, kind of working on my own and doing my own thing for years, you know, as a reporter, right. You know, kind of in charge of your creating your own content, whereas now we're just managing people, but, it's a group effort for sure. And I think it's important though. I think that's, you know, I don't think people understand how much we're building a brand here, right? Like, we already had the brand with Hunt the Front, the YouTube channel and the online brand, right? But now we're building a brand with the Hunt the Front Super Dirt Series that's going to, hopefully, you know, we want to build it to be on par with the Lucas Oil Series or the World of Outlaws, right? Like, we want people to hear Hunt the Front Series, or the HDF Series, you know, however, you know, whatever they associate it with, and they think, oh, that's the best drivers in the Southeast, I'm going to that event, right? And or I'm going to watch it, whatever. You know, and that's not something that I don't think people understand branding and marketing in our sport very well. There are at the top level, they do. They hire people that know what they're doing. Lucas Oil Series, Flow Racing, Dirt Vision, and World of Outlaws, you know, they know what they're doing. But when, you know, we're trying to kind of taking that and using it to build racing and, you know, at the regional level in the Southeast, you know, and it takes good content, good graphics on social media, you know, good flyers, it's consistent in your branding and all that. So it's been a, you know, and I'm not good at any of that. That's the thing, is we put people in place to do it for us, right? Like, we pay and you know, the professionals to do it. And I think too often you see tracks and series that try to, you know, I mean, I get it. It's expensive to pay for someone to do your flyers or someone to put together a promotional video. But it goes a long way in really building your brand and, you know, attracting people to your product. So that's what we've really invested in. Did that answer your question? What else was, did I miss the streaming part? What else were we?
You're good. I was just curious with just like, you know, with your content creation background, and, I just feel like I'm just impressed you with, the brand that you built. I think you summed that up well in terms of like the streaming. I was just curious as to how, you know, you try to navigate those waters. And I think you've also covered that well too, but, yeah.
Well, I think, so that is something I mean, just the other day I posted, you know, we posted that we had formed an agreement with Cherokee Speedway, streaming, you know, we're streaming their biggest races this year, you know, kind of signed a deal with them and made the announcement. And then I shared it on my personal page and someone tells me I'm stealing money from the tracks and ruining the sport. Right. First of all, I'm the last one who's going to try to ruin this sport. Like, this is something I've done my entire life. I promise you, if I felt like it was ruining the sport, I wouldn't be doing it. Right. And, you know, I've made the mistake of responding to that comment when I shouldn't have. I know better than to respond to comments, you know, and it's because we get plenty of irrational, hateful stuff, you know, across our various pages. But anyway, but it is the point. It is the truth. Like, first of all, where the conception that, you know, streamers don't pay for, they pay, you know, benefit the tracks, right? Like, even the top highest levels of, you know, brands of this sport are actually providing revenue to the tracks to help replace that revenue lost by ticket, you know, lost ticket sales, right? That you know, presumably come from streaming. And it does. I guarantee you there are people who will choose to stay home and watch a live stream instead of going to a race at times, right? But at the same time, you know, that again, that's the reason streaming companies are bringing revenue to the table for these events. My biggest take on it is I don't want to argue whether or not streaming keeps people home, right? Like, that's not an argument. It doesn't matter, because to me, you know, like, we're living in a different world, right? And this sport has evolved. And I tell people all the time, it's kind of like, you know, if you're against streaming and you're not embracing streaming, you're kind of like Blockbuster back in the, you know, early 2000s, the first decade of the 2000s, 2010s, whatever, refusing to be like Netflix is what you're doing, right? It doesn't matter what you think about it and if you like it or not, but that's the direction this sport, the world, but definitely, you know, but our sport within this, you know, within this world is headed. And if you don't embrace it and embrace the changing business model, you're going to be like Blockbuster and go out of business, right? Like, that's just the truth, whether you like it or not. Like, we try to make it as easy and as beneficial as possible to the tracks to do it, to make it work. I think we pay more money, between streaming and sponsorships than anybody. I know we do, right? Like, than Lucas Oil World of Outlaws. And that's the best we can do. And every time I get someone telling me literally someone tells me I'm ruining the sport, it pisses me off. And I'm going on a rant now, but you know, we're trying to work within this environment, this hand we've been dealt with since COVID, the way our society changed, where people aren't interested in going and sitting watching an event for 4 or 5 hours as much as they used to be. And if they might be, if it's a big show, we saw it 2 weeks ago, we put on a race at Southern Raceway head to head with High Limit and Lucas Oil at Golden Isles. We helped put it on. It was the USCS and the tracks event. And we brought Crate USA in to have $10,000 win crate show and the USCS sprint cars. And it was a record crowd. And to me, we streamed it. People could have stayed home and watched it. It was the biggest crowd I've ever seen there. I can't officially say it's record because no one really knows, but it is the biggest crowd I've seen there. People could have stayed home and watched Kyle Larson and the High Limit deal and Lucas Oil on the same night at Golden Isles. They could have stayed and watched our race, that race at Southern Raceway, on our app, right? That they had that option, but instead they came in big numbers to see it in person, right? And that's what you got to understand is they may not be coming to your local show like they used to, but that's not going to change. We're not going to put the genie back in the bottle and go back to where you have, you know, the crowds we had years ago at local shows, weekly shows. So we got to figure out a way as a sport to work together to build our sport in this new environment, this new business model we're dealing with. And I feel like and if anyone has any questions about it as a promoter, I understand if you're a promoter, a track promoter, and you're frustrated with this new environment, but we can help. Like, in Lucas Oil series, they're really good at it. The World of Outlaws, you know, and I'm sure there's other series that they're embracing it and understanding it. And that's our job as a sanctioning body, is to help you, and streaming company is to help them, you know, embrace this new business model and benefit from it. So that's what we're trying to do. And it frustrates me whenever someone acts like we're just coming in and ruining the sport just to pat our own pockets, when literally we put like all that money, that points fund money and payouts you're seeing this year, we could have put more money in our own pockets this year, and we didn't. We paid it to tracks, paid it to drivers, trying to benefit and grow the sport. So hopefully people see that.
I think one thing that you try to, I'm sure you're trying to show to these racetracks too, that there's more, these promoters, that there's more eyes watching your racing and all the racing than there's ever been, really. That should help them be able to sell some sponsorship on their side to overcome if they think some people aren't coming to the racetrack. But I've always thought, like, now with the streaming, that it's keeping more people in interacting with racing and you know, involved with racing than it ever has. I mean, I came from writing for a racing paper, and we saw when I was there before streaming, you know, I could see like the subscription churn there. You know, every year there'd be several thousand people that didn't renew, but the subscription count didn't go down. So there were new people coming in. And I would notice that there would always be a lot of people once they stopped going to a race, they just stopped, you know, they didn't go anymore. They got out of the sport. And now I see like these same people, they're watching it. They're watching it on if they don't go as much, they watch it streaming and they still will go to some races. I mean, I don't think a baseball team can expect everyone to go to 82 games a year, you know, 81 games a year or whatever. They have to, you want got people to just go to like select certain, you know, at least get a lot of people to maybe run, go to four or five races a year. And when you have streaming, I think it does, you have to probably have seen that too, where it does keep more people connected to the sport now.
Yeah. I think the sport, like, it's all about how many people are engaged in the sport, right? Like, they're following it. You know, I hardly have time to watch professional sports anymore. Like, I'm too busy. Like, I'm a huge Florida Gators fan. And when we're racing on Saturdays and, you know, football season, especially now that I'm actually helping put on the events, you know, I don't get to watch. I might have watched, I think I watched one game last year, but I follow it, you know, through watching replays on YouTube or online, watching the highlights, watching the social media. Like, I'm engaged in it, even though I've literally been to two Florida Gator fans in my games in my life. But, you know, I'm engaged with it. If it was closer, I'd go more often if I didn't have to race and everything. But like, it's like, there's other ways to keep fans engaged and also to, you know, extract revenue from them through streaming. Right. Like, so I think that's what you're saying, you know, what you're implying is that we're growing the number of fans. Now, do they come to the races every single weekend? No, they don't. No. And I think we live in a society where it's hard to expect people to come to the races anymore with everything, how segmented we are and so many different things going on and options for people to you know, spend their money and to invest their time. But as long as you're keeping them engaged, where if I'm, you know, at a, you know, kids karate thing and there's a race on and I can pull out my phone and check in and see what's going on Flow or Dirt Vision or XR or whatever it is, or on the front TV, you know, like, or, you know, if I'm not able to be at this track, at least I'm still supporting it with my subscription revenue. And I'm still engaged in it instead of just tuning it out altogether. So I think you definitely hit on something there, Kevin. And hopefully, I mean, I think it's a balancing act. I'll say that, you know, how we keep people coming, but also, you know, watching online, but also still coming. But I think we're all trying to do it the best we can. On both sides.
Yeah, I think some, you know, I've had my phone on watching a race at someone's wedding or something before, you know, like I checked in or some party or something, and people are like, what is that? You know, or at a restaurant, you know, I was just at a restaurant last week watching part of a race, and people are like, what is that? What, you know, it does strike up a conversation sometimes, right? I mean, that has to interest some people maybe. That you never would have gotten interested in racing before.
Yeah. And I have an example for that this weekend. So Sunday we streamed the March Madness at Cherokee Speedway on Hunt the Front TV. And it was my son's 10th birthday party. And I had it hooked up to the TV and, you know, in our living room, and people were coming and going in and out. We had the bounce house out front and everything, but you know, I don't know how many times I explained what that was to my son's, friend's parents, and neighbors. So, you know, I know there's not a whole lot of examples like that, but you know, it definitely, you know, what got me was I'm explaining this sport to them that we participate in, and used to be, I always explained it like it's kind of this backwoods, you know, it wasn't something that came across as professional, is the way, let me say it that way. Then they watch it and they see on screen how professional it looks and how, you know, the different camera angles and, you know, and everything that's going on, and it looks like they're watching a professional sporting event, right? And to them, I think it comes across as, wow, that's really cool, that's a big deal that y'all are involved with, right? Whereas before, it's just, you know, a bunch of rednecks that go out to the dirt track. Not that.
Yeah, you're just talking about it, trying to tell them what was going on. Right? Yeah,
exactly. And it sounds like, I think how many times it sounds like a very redneck thing to do is what, you know, usually was the response. And now they're seeing that this is, you know, you know, we're at least able to present it as something that's very professional and something worth maybe checking out at your local track.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, you probably have seen that too. I mean, Kyle helps out with his basketball team. I'm sure all those kids on that team aren't, you know, race fans and stuff, but they've probably learned a little bit about just from you showing them something, right?
I mean, I would show them videos and stuff, and I would post things like on my Instagram story, and all my kids on my basketball team, like, I want to go to a race with you. Like, I've got to get out to a race. And, just like any kid, any person has to be fascinated with watching what 850 horsepower, you know, dirt machine, if that's late model sprint cars, modifieds, you name it, you know, anybody's got to be compelled or fascinated with that side of this, or with our sport. And so, I get that often, actually, because like I used to be involved in, or I'm still involved, in my local sports area back home here in Maryland, in Frederick, and used to cover high school sports and college sports. And people ask me like, what are you up to nowadays? And I show them highlights, you know, the abundance of highlights that are now on YouTube and on the internet. And I have not had one interaction where like the person has left walking away thinking like, dude, like you're an idiot, you know, for wanting to do what you're doing. Everyone has left fascinated or compelled or wanting to show out to race. So I'm absolutely on board with everything you said there, Joshua, and appreciate, you know, what you guys have been able to do and build at the end of the day. So
yeah, maybe we can get a Hunt the Front bus or something and collect all these people sometimes, right? Or
Bring them out to the
race. Right through, and drive them to the racetrack when they see this. That looks pretty cool. All right, well, we'll jump on the bus here and we'll break you out, you know. So well, Joshua, I think it's been cool. I think we've got some good conversation here. And we do one more thing, right? You remember this from when you were doing the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We always ended with one more thing. Mm-hmm. So we're even going to let you have a one more thing to start out, to end this. So, ooh. Joshua, you know, like go back to – you might want to just mention when you have a race coming up. So, but, yeah, one more thing to start off with, Joshua.
Yeah, because I don't think we
are throwing that out there for you. I'm teeing it up for you.
We are. I just want to. My one more thing is the Bama Bash coming up at Talladega Short Track, March. I think I should know the dates, but 15th and 16th. It kicks off the Hunt the Front Super Dirt Series. For those who don't know, the Bama Bash was a long running event in Green Valley Speedway. Unfortunately, there and it closed down in Gadsden, Alabama, and moved to East Alabama Motor Speedway for a couple years. And then Adam Stewart, when he started promoting Talladega Short Track, attempted to bring it back a couple years ago, but got rained out. Hopefully, Mother Nature cooperates this year, because we're trying to bring it back and make it a big deal. Hopefully, kind of where it can kick off the Hunt in the Front Super Dirt Series every year with some big race at Talladega Short Track. 5,000 to win Friday, 15,000 to win, 1,000 start on Saturday, and I think there's going to be a big turnout of cars. I think we're going to have close to 20 series regulars by that point, I think, if not more, plus the other guys, standout regional guys, and maybe some national guys dropping in. So check it out. Can't be there, watch it live on Hunt the Front TV.
All right, let's hope for some good weather there too. I think that was the one. Were you at the race at the Bama Bash? I think it was the one year where, wasn't it Steve Casebolt or someone saying it was
Steve
snowing
Casebolt.
There?
Yeah,
Were you at that one?
Literally, it got snowed out. Yeah, I was there. It started snowing. An hour. I'm remembering the story because I remember writing the story on that. It started snow. His left rear went flat under caution. And so if it goes back green, he's done. He's got to come in and change the tire. He's rolling around with the left rear flat and it's snowing. And I remember I wrote my story that I wrote that night. My lead for the story was if he was singing wintertime tunes, it was Let It Snow, Let It Snow that he was singing in the in the cockpit. And it sure did. It snowed it out. Steve Casebolt won the race, a snow shortened race at the Bama Bash there in 2012, 13, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it was at
there,
least
10
years ago, right? Something like that, right? Yeah. I always remember. I
should look that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep, that was exactly. Good. You should be better. I don't think you're going to get snow in Talladega, are you? Yeah, that is it. Green Valley up a little bit more, a little more north.
They were running it, I think, the last weekend in February. Then, like after Speed Weeks, is when it was before. So moving it back into March, hopefully will help. We'll see. Weather, springtime weather can be a pain for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll give my one more thing right here. I just want to mention, talk about that March Madness race that Hunt the Front had on Sunday, and that was the first the biggest career win for Trent Ivey, 29-year-old. He led all the laps there at Cherokee. Cherokee's his track. I mean, that's his backyard. He's really good there, but he stayed ahead of everybody else and was able to pick off the biggest win of his career. And looks like this year he's going to be a Hunt the Front guy. He's going to expand out his racing a little bit more. Last year, he didn't really race too much because he's building his business. So keep an eye on Trent Ivey. He hasn't even turned 30 yet. He doesn't turn 30 till the end of the year in November. And he's one of those guys that's he's run Eldora. He's run the Dreams. He's run some World 100s. He qualified for the Eldora Million. He's started to get himself out there and race more at some bigger races and getting that experience. And I think running the Hunt the Front should seem like a perfect kind of series for him. Going to get him to be able to get more, more experience at some different racetracks, run for some good point fund, get his name out there more, run some bigger purses. I think Trent Ivey's a perfect guy to be able to go out there. Maybe we see him as a Hunt the Front champion. We'll see. We'll see what happens this year. Kyle, bring us home with your one more thing.
Yeah, open wheel superstar and two-time Chili Bowl champ. The news came out last week that Logan Seavey is going to be making his foray into dirt late model racing. And so I know there's been a lot of interest on his end over the last few years, especially when, if people recall, during COVID, when everything was shut down, that he raced Mark Richards's virtual Rocket House car during the World of Outlaws iRacing races during COVID back in 2020. So that's where the interest started for Logan Seavey. And one thing kind of led to the next with Chris Bragg Racing, car owner there from Texas. And now he's going to be making his debut on May 8th at Spoon River. So, and then he's got events on May 9th at Lincoln, and then May 12th at Brownstown. So he's got three races on the docket. Who knows? Maybe he and Chris Bragg can make it out to hunt the Front race one time. We'll have to see. But I thought that was cool just to see that crossover continuing to happen with the open wheel side of the sport and dirt late model racing.
Yeah, so I know that yeah, Logan Seavey's gotten a lot of good remarks on his driving. A lot of people were talking about him back at Speed Weeks when he was at Volusia. And I know Mark Richards, he's a big fan of him too. He tested that Rocket car back, I think it was at Farmer City last year. And so he's a big proponent of his talent. So it will be fun to see Logan get in the late model. Just gonna thank Joshua for joining us. We had a little guest on for the first. It's our first time, I think, having a guest like this. And we asked the question, so it was a fun time. Thanks, Joshua, for coming on with us, and good luck with the Hunt the Front series this year, and with Joseph's racing, and we'll say thanks to everybody for listening and watching the Dirt Reporters podcast this week, and we'll see you again next week.